Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, October 2nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we keep this Bang the Book Radio train rolling down the tracks here for this week. Two guests joined me on the program today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll chat a little bit of NFL Week 5. Then also on the eve of the start of the NHL season, we'll chat with him about some hockey betting tips, some teams he likes going into the season, and some teams that he doesn't like. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join us. We'll chat NFL Week 5 and College Football Week 6 with him. Seven games coming up with in-depth breakdowns. Then also his top situational and top technical plays, for this week in the world of college football. So definitely looking forward to that. Over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information, we've got a ton of stuff going on over there. I've got a preview, or at least a pick and a write-up for tonight's Rockies versus Cubs game. We'll also have tomorrow's A's versus Yankees game. And I'm working on my series previews now that we're getting a better idea of who's going to play who, can get a start on those. Still waiting for some prices in the offshore market for those series. I've got my Astros Indians piece just about finished, just waiting on a price for that. Of course, we'll see what the wild card games hold over the next couple of days. We can look for those over at bangthebook.com. Parker Michaels still rolling out his NHL team previews. Furious finish to get those done as he's looking at the top 10 now of his personal rankings there for the upcoming NHL season. So very good look at those. My college football power ratings are updated. Opening line reports for the NFL and college football. I'll have a super contest recap coming up here early this afternoon. Also a recap of the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. So lots of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Don't forget about that promo code from our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up using that code BANG100, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here on the program today. The first one, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
All right, Adam. It's, terrifying. I mean, we're a quarter of the way through the NFL season. It's crazy, yep. Man. You talk all year long, it's over before it starts.
I tell you what, man. I was sitting here and I wrote up my NHL situational piece this morning, taking a look at some potential spot plays here for the first half week of the season. And it just hit me that, you know, NHL starts tomorrow, NBA starts in 2 weeks, college basketball in a month, NFL's a quarter of the way over, college football's regular season's almost halfway over. It's a busy time of year, man.
Oh, it's insane. It gets busier and busier and busier. And I would say to you, you know, with the apps and technology and convenience, and the Ryder Cup, golf's kind of going to, you think it's going to wind down, but actually, next season starts. You get the fall tournaments where the points count for next year. NASCAR, you're just sitting there racing about to go, and you can do NASCAR matchups. It's amazing. Your World Cup soccer is now a monster, and even here in Vegas, soccer is a big thing. It's endless. It is year round, buddy. It used to be, All-Star Game in July. That was you get a little break, a couple of weeks there. You get a day now. You know, there's a day off this year.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and that's how it is for people like you and I that cover all the sports, and then for the guests that we have on the show that, you know, are covering all the sports as well. You know, it's not like these major mainstream media outlets who have writers dedicated to, you know, one specific sport or maybe two sports. We're covering it all. So, you know, glad that we're able to do it. Certainly not complaining about the career path that I've chosen. But, you know, like I said, a two-week dark period across all sports would be a godsend.
No, honestly, buddy, I mean, you say that every day. There's no whining. I mean, we get to talk about sports. I mean, honestly, if I got a day off, I'm going to sit around and watch sports. Lucky. Let's not kid each other.
All right, well, I do want to touch real quickly, and as you mentioned, the Safeway Open here is Thursday. So the 2018-19 wraparound season for golf does start in just a couple of days here. But, you know, I thought we had some real good analysis of the Ryder Cup. And the one thing I have to say here, and, you know, we did have some bets that came through, certainly, and, of course, you had the Tiger Woods playing the Tour Championship a couple of weeks ago. the lasting impression that I have of the Ryder Cup here, seeing all these stories coming out about Patrick Reed being a dick, which isn't really a big surprise, Bubba Watson not wanting to integrate with his teammates, Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, who are good friends, almost coming to blows, I feel awful for Jim Furyk. I mean, this could not have played out any worse for him. He's the guy I feel really bad for in all this.
Well, I would say this. I mean, the Europeans do treat it like a family and team, and the U.S. has always been individuals. And you can feel bad for Furyk, but the bottom line is the guy, you know, the fish rots from the head down. And I'll say this. You know, Paul Azinger has success. Paul Azinger, a lot of people didn't like Paul Azinger. You know, probably a lot of people don't want to go out and have a beer with Bill Belichick. You know, you know, there's got to be a way to mold the room and figure out how to pull this off on foreign soil. But we talked about it last week, buddy. I mean, we looked at it and flat out. It's a bunch of individuals when you looked at it. And when we broke it down last week, said, I thought the wrong side was favored. That's ridiculous. I mean, you look at those European guys. Yeah, okay. Well, Molinari was playing as good a golf as anybody. Justin Rose is the number one golfer in the world. Ian Poulter is a lunatic, and whatever. It's revisionist history. It's over. But when we talked about it last week, there were real numbers that were just in opportunities, and certainly Europe was one. And I'll just throw this very quickly on the golf that there are things that apply to us moving forward, just general things you do when you handicap. I would say the final day, you watch Tiger Woods. He was worn out. He was tired. And that is perfect. His Ryder Cup record A's is awful. But it was perfectly understandable that this guy was worn out and was going to have a letdown. It's like sports handicap in that golf tournament. And if you watch Justin Rose throughout the course of the tournament, with his partner, they were able to ham and egg it around the course. But he was tired because he was battling for the FedEx. It got to Sunday, and when they were playing singles, Webb Simpson looked good on Saturday, and the guy was fresh as a daisy, and he was plus $1.40 against Justin Rose. And if you just use your common sense and the things you apply in your handicap, if Simpson was playing good and was fresh as a daisy, Rose was worn out. And here's Webb Simpson was plus $1.40, and he pummeled him. So even in golf tournaments, and I'm a horse racing guy. There are things I think about when I handicap horses that I apply in sports handicapping. It's the company you keep, common frames of reference. I guess what I'm getting at is it's keep it simple, stupid, and sometimes don't overthink things. Some of the things that are so obvious, they're just right in front of your nose.
Yeah, and as you look at the Safeway Open here this week, Phil Mickelson, the only guy from the Ryder Cup playing in this thing, Mickelson, probably a fade candidate here when it comes to matchups because he was in awful form over there in Paris. And then, of course, now, you know, coming back, going all the way out to California, probably a good spot to fade Phil Mickelson in some matchups here in the Safeway Open. But I do want to chat some NFL and then make sure we've got some time for the NHL as well here, Brian. So
sure.
Let's start with a look at Thursday night's game between Indianapolis and New England. New England, a 10-point favorite here. And I guess when you consider the price tag when they were on the road against Detroit, the price tag when they hosted Miami, and then, of course, what they did to Miami here this past weekend, you can kind of justify this number, at least based on other lines that we've seen regarding the Patriots. But, man, I don't know of anybody that's going to be excited to lay 10 points with New England, short week or not.
Well, no. And we talked about it, Adam. People want to panic about New England. What do? They do it every year. They're able to right the ship. Believe me, if you looked to the week before and, what's wrong with the Patriots, blah, blah, blah. Again, you want to sit there and come up with 1,600 things? What's wrong? Oh, they don't have the personnel. Well, a lot of years they haven't had personnel. But sometimes you give credit where credit was due. And if anybody, and you can say he's going to be no good as a head coach and the jury's still out, Patricia, but they literally just had this – if anybody was going to be able to dial something up team-wise that could conceivably frustrate New England, it was going to be Matt Patricia. You know, so people kind of overreact to some of the things they see. And then Miami's 3-0. Well, okay, who'd Miami play? So New England's New England, and where they reside is not changed since they're in the AFC East. So, you know, to sit there and I get it, you know, running backs can hit a wall and it's over almost overnight. And the day's going to come when Brady is going to – it's just not going to be Tom Brady anymore. But that's not the case yet. They'll figure their personnel out. They'll be fine.
Well, on the Patriots there last week, 449 to 172 in yards. They ran 30 more plays than the Dolphins. And look, you know, the Dolphins were a regression candidate, as you mentioned. They didn't play anybody. They had very, very good red zone defensive metrics that probably weren't going to stay, and they did give up three touchdowns on four red zone trips to Patriots here this week. But this is the thing. You know, now everyone's going to look at that game, that one game sample where the Patriots just clubbed an inferior team that was playing over its head, and assume the Patriots are back. And you know what? Maybe they are. Maybe the Patriots have gotten their wake-up call. Maybe being 2-2, you know, is kind of where we should have expected them to be with Tom Brady getting up there in years, now on the plus side of 40. This is the thing. Everyone just automatically assumes, well, New England's back, so they're just going to blow out Indianapolis this week. They're just going to keep rolling right on, go 13-3 or 12-4, win the division with ease. And they've earned that reputation. I just don't know if I'm in a rush to lay 10 points here this week. And also, too, I mean, with a 10-point line, you don't have a whole lot of teaser possibilities in play here for this one either. You tease down to 3.5 with a 6.5-point teaser. You're really not getting a ton of equity in something like that. So I'll be really curious to see what happens with this line for Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, and you go to the other side of the coin, bud, with Indianapolis. We sit here and say, okay, let's break down what's going on with them. And we said this on the podcast. We were gearing up for that game in week two. I said, watch the Thursday night game and see how Cincinnati played against Baltimore. And they boat raced them. And Indy lost a coin. It was an 11-point score, but it was a pick or fumble or whatever it was right at the last second. So Indy had played Cincy tough. I said, well, let's see how Cincy looks on Thursday. Cincy looked good. And Indy then went on the road and won 21-9 at Washington. Well, after that, they lose a close game to the Eagles. And basically, Frank Reich, you can go after him. They had it. The game was a tie, but he went for the win. And now you can say give him credit for it or say, why did you do that? But from his own 45 in overtime with 20 seconds left, you know, he went for the win. They didn't get the first down. Houston made a pass and kicked the field goal. So Indy's been in every game. And luck is still finding his groove. So I'm with you. I mean, you go broke in the NFL, generally speaking, is the thought process if you lay more than double digits. So, yeah, Indy's a moderately intriguing team on a week-to-week basis. New England, certainly. The other thing that did go into last week was – they had a stone in their shoe, and, you know, they played like it. And Belichick's pretty good. Now you got to sustain it, and they got to go on a win streak. But cover 10.5 maybe is a different animal.
The one thing I will say about this game, and then we'll move on from it here, Andrew Luck threw the ball 62 times last week. Remember, this is a guy who didn't play all of last year because of a shoulder injury. He's on pace for 744 pass attempts this season. And he's already had 34% of his total pass attempts from 2016 when he had 545. And again, this is a guy who didn't play all of last year, didn't get a ton of reps in the preseason. So that is a very realistic concern, not just this week with the short week and the quick turnaround, but as the season goes along for the Colts here, that at some point they're going to have to back Andrew Luck off a little bit, not just for this year, but for the future of his career. Because if he's throwing the ball 700 times after missing an entire season, you're kind of asking for trouble there in that situation. Brian, let's go to Sunday here.
Yeah, real quick on that. Just that it's T.Y. Hilton is listed as doubtful for this game. And that would make – if T.Y. Hilton was playing, and I know it's a high total, I mean, you can see this game going up and down. But if Hilton's not in there, I mean, that's a massive weapon that Luck would not have at his beck and call. So – yeah, I would think certainly on the total perspective, Hilton's presence matters to me.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, the Colts have had a lot of injuries at the tight end position too, with Jack Doyle not suiting up the last 2 weeks. And, you know, obviously with a quick turnaround here, he may not be out there either. So Indianapolis going to be a little bit shorthanded when it comes to weapons at the skill positions. How about game 455, 456 here? Tennessee and Buffalo. The Bills play really well against Minnesota, come away with that enormous outright upset win, then get shut out by Green Bay the next week. Now they're back at home, getting 3.5 against the Titans.
Wow. I'm impressed, man. You want to talk about this one. I'm impressed. Let me ask you a question. The Rams are awesome, right? I mean, they're a big story in the NFL. Kansas City, they look great. That was a great game, by the way, on Monday night. But is it safe to say Tennessee maybe the hidden nugget, the one of the best stories in the NFL so far?
Wow. I mean, that's a tough thing to say because, look, I mean, this is a Tennessee team that, you know, in that first game against Miami was a little bit strange. You had all the weather delays and things like that. But this is a team that's 3-1 and only +2 in point differential. So I have a real hard time believing in the sustainability of Tennessee, but you got to give them credit because with their quarterback injuries, with a new coaching staff, all that, these are all character building wins. And I know it's not necessarily quantifiable, but you know, if you're Tennessee right now and you're sitting there at 3-1, I mean, I still think Jacksonville is clearly the best team in the AFC South, but for Tennessee, you got to be really pleased with where you are right now.
I'll give you a weird analogy. Okay, they start out of the season. It's only 4 games, but then we're going to get to the NHL. But they're finding ways to win these games. Mariota wasn't part of the equation. It was like the Golden Knights last year. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury got hurt, and they were down to their 5th goaltender. And they were able to play .500 hockey until he got back. And then look what they went on and did. So just, you know, looking down the road, that being said, I'm about to say – this could be a banana peel this week. But anyway, it's amazing, though, when teams find, you look at that margin, Adam. One of the things you always talk about is, say, a young team or you're changing the culture, you got to learn how to win. One of the most valuable things that you should take into account is the ability to win close games. I mean, if you're finding a way to win a close game, if a team starts consistently doing that, they're dangerous.
And the thing with the Titans, too, and maybe Mike Vrabel just brings out the best in them in this regard, is that they've had a ton of individual talent. Mike Mularkey just wasn't really the guy to put it all together. Maybe now they've got that guy, somebody fiery like Mike Vrabel. You've got Kerry Coombs, who was an Ohio State secondary coach last year. Very, very fiery guy. Maybe it is just a different culture here with Tennessee. I don't know how that benefits them here this week going up on the road at Buffalo after, you know, 3 emotional wins, 2 of them over division opponents, and this past one here over the reigning Super Bowl champs in overtime. Maybe this is a flat spot for Tennessee, but this is one of those games, and I probably won't have any action on it, but this is one of those games where if the Titans go up there and win, and even if they cover the number, people will scoff at this game and say, well, they beat the Bills. The Bills are terrible. Who cares? But to go out there in this type of situational spot off of 3 wins by exactly 3 points, if they go up there and win this game by 4 or more, that's a really impressive win that they won't get credit for.
Well, no, they won't. And you're correct about that. As for the game itself, I would say this to you, and this is, it would be along the lines of what we said the week the Bills were going to play Minnesota. And we said that's a horrible spot for Minnesota, laying 16.5. You had Buffalo where a guy quit on them at halftime in the locker room, and they got rolled in 2 games. And they went up there and won for chuckles. And then now all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, wow, oh, look at how they played against the Vikings. And believe me, there was legitimate hope and a question mark that, well, wait a minute, with the Allen kid, maybe the Bills aren't that bad. Do they have a shot going against a one-legged Aaron Rodgers? Well, they didn't put a point on the board. But I will tell you, though, week to week, Adam, that defense played great in that game. If you hold Aaron Rodgers and the Packers to 22 points at home, you should have a chance to win the football game. And that's what this defense does. Other than the opener, and the first half of the San Diego game, they got the defense sorted out in Buffalo. And it's a loud place. It's a tough place to play. The rub is Josh Allen, it all looked good in the game against Minnesota. This last game, this kid got sacked 7 times. And people that would tune in occasionally or watch this or see the highlights, oh, this kid's no good. And you talk about feeling sorry for somebody. It's Allen, because he'll stand in the pocket and he'll take the pummeling. No one is open. Adam, they don't have a wide receiver on this team. Not one. Their best options is possibly the tight end. Clay or Kroom can get open. Nobody is open. So, maybe a function of that, you're on the road, the crowd noise, maybe they're going to be a different animal at home. I think Buffalo's defense, I think this game goes right down to the wire. Don't go nuts with what you last witnessed. The one thing that I do believe is true coming into this game is that Buffalo's defense is playing very well and can create turnovers, and this game could be a banana peel for Tennessee.
All right, let's transition over to the NHL side of things here. Good to see some regular season lines up there on the board for Wednesday. 4 games to open things up, including a banner raising in Washington for the Stanley Cup champions as they host the Boston Bruins. But, Brian, you're a hockey guy. You were on the pre- and post-game shows for the Buffalo Sabres, yourself and Mike Robitaille, and I remember watching those when I was in high school. And I've talked about this before here on the show, that it's almost surreal to be able to have you on my radio show now, after I watched you guys on the pre and post game stuff, and it's absolutely awesome. But I just want to touch on some general NHL betting tips here first. Some of the things that you look for on a day in, day out basis in pucks.
Well, I don't know that I necessarily will do it on Wednesday. I think because it's a season opener and the format may be different, but generally speaking, and sometimes it's the hardest thing to find, but when the home team has a ceremony, now they're raising the cup and the banners, and Wilson's just going to be suspended. And Boston's a really good team. Generally speaking, I'd probably be looking at Boston. But throughout the course of the year, if you get wind of there's going to be a pregame ceremony for in the home teams. Probably on average, I would say, Adam, maybe 50 of them a year. The two teams, they come out and warm up. And then there's the home ceremony. And the home team comes out, and they're just standing there, like, swaying in the breeze, tapping their stick and being there for the guy's speech. And the visiting team is in the locker room riding the bike or chewing on nails, and 7 out of 10 times they come out and they're up 2-0 in the first 5 minutes. They're ready to go. The other team, you look at the first period, play the visitor, and sometimes you get some really nice big dog plays. When there's a ceremony, play the visitor. That's a big one.
Yeah, it definitely is. And of course, our own Parker Michaels, doing his NHL team previews, had Washington 18th. Out of the 31, whatever it is now in the NHL, had the Capitals 18th here coming off of that Stanley Cup win. So does expect a lot of regression from them. Boston, a top 10 team for him. So as Brian mentioned already, Boston, a very good team, probably the way to look there in that Wednesday game. And when he means ceremonies, you've got retirements, you've got, Ring of Honor or Team Hall of Fame types of things. You've got guys that go into the National Hockey Hall of Fame, also the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. All those types of things do lead to some ceremonies in the pregame. Sometimes you've got, teammate sets a new franchise record in points or 500th goal or, you never know. There's a lot of those different things that do come out here. But, Brian, what else do you look for as kind of a general rule? I mean, sometimes you've got early on in the season here revenge games of teams that got knocked out of the playoffs by the team that they're playing. You've got early rivalry games. You've got, chip on your shoulder types of games. What all factors into your handicap for the NHL?
Honestly, Adam, I would say to you, as is the case with virtually everything, and again, we've had this discussion 1,000 times, analytics, Corsi, numbers, it all has its place. But the best thing in your toolbox are your eyes, is watch games and know how teams play. know how their style, their what their style is. Obviously, find out who the goalies are. You know, if a backup goalie's coming in, and oh, wait a minute, if both backups are playing, that total should go up a full goal. Sometimes it doesn't go up 10 cents. So, you know, obviously the goaltenders or something, look at travel, 3 games in 4 nights. One of the best ones would be teams coming home from a long road trip. Hey, they're back home. Well, that first game home, they're coming home, and they're paying bills, and they're playing with the kids, and they're going to the grocery store, and they're doing things for their wives that have been, you know, doing all the work for a week. They come home, they've got things they do to try to – and the first game home is a brutal game to play. And I think the general rule of thumb is a 4-game trip or longer. The first game home, you know, look to fade the home team. Then they find the scheduling stuff. It could be an East Coast team's on a Western road swing, and they're playing in Anaheim, and then they play L.A., and then they've got a day off before they play Arizona, and they go down to Arizona. And Arizona is either playing the night before and then flying home, and the visiting team is sitting there waiting for them to punch them in the mouth. So check the schedule. I mean, again, a lot of this stuff is very simplistic, but the numbers in many instances, it's why I like the NHL better than anything, is I think they do a lot better than they ever have. But I still think there are defined cracks in the armor for the odds makers that you find really opportunities on the board where you can just say, I ain't buying that. That's a bad number.
Well, and it's so interesting because we talked about this a lot last year, and it certainly helped that the Golden Knights wound up winning the Western Conference, going to the Stanley Cup Finals, and of course they'll have a banner raising and then a Route 91 festival ceremony to honor the 1-year anniversary of the tragic shooting prior to Thursday night's game out there. So, you know, maybe Vegas, a team that you could potentially want to look to fade there a little bit Thursday night. But, you know, these lines have gotten sharper now because of increased, you know, interest from the Las Vegas odds makers and the sports books. The offshores have always had all these games, and some offshores are even based in Canada. But now that the lines have gotten a little bit tighter, a little bit more efficient, there have been larger handles out there in Las Vegas, the NHL market has gotten tighter, I think, you know, over the last 12 months or so. And I'll be real curious to see how things play out this season in that regard as well.
Well, I can cite two very quick examples for you. One, I've never seen this before. You know, when the preseason starts, I'll probably put the Golden Knights game up. Every game on the board. Every preseason game was on the board. I've never seen that before. Happened all, and then a night the Golden Knights weren't playing, every preseason game on the board. The market here has a defined interest in hockey now. So it's amazing. In the offerings, props, yes, no, where a guy score a goal. There are 10 props on every Golden Knights game. So there are opportunities up and down the road with offerings that just frankly were never available before. But, you know, from the season win totals, I can tell you the magnitude of it. They've talked about this. The Golden Knights opened 96.5. It's up to 100.5. Some of the books in town, I mean, they wanted them to win last year for the community, but believe me, the books would have got billy clubbed if the Golden Knights would have won the Stanley Cup final. And this year, some of the books are saying one of the biggest decisions in their history will be the season point total for the Golden Knights. It went from 96.5 up to 100.5.
Wow. That is, wow. It's so stunning to hear that, but it's awesome. You know, I mean, it's great for the city. The city has fully embraced that team. The team certainly made it very easy for the city to do that with the run that they went on last year. But it's great to see, especially for a couple of hockey fans like Brian and I. All right, Brian, so let's touch here real quickly on how about some teams that you're high on coming into the season? Are there some teams that you think will be undervalued or that you just want to back here in the early portion of the year?
Selfishly, I got it at 76.5 a while ago. And yes, full disclosure, I watch the Sabres every night. Team that's ready to – last year they were the worst team in the league, and they lost 21 one-goal games. And they beat Boston, Tampa Bay, and Toronto 7 times. I think they've got better goaltending with Carter Hutton. They've got Rasmus Dahlin there. And finally, there's an infusion of some quality – talent on the third and fourth lines. Adam, their third and fourth lines last year weren't NHL players. So anyway, I think it's a team that can compete and maybe hang around, you know, be within 5 or 6 points of eighth in February. And so at least it's in the discussion that they're fighting to be around in the playoff. Well, to make the playoffs, you got to get 95 points. I think they'll fade late, but 80.5, I think Buffalo over is actually a pretty reasonable expectation.
How about teams on the other side of the coin? Are there some teams that you're looking for some regression from, maybe looking to fade here early on in the season?
The one that I just keep coming back to is Minnesota. I think that window was there, you know, but I think it's closing, and yeah, it's closing fast. I mean, they were a 100-point team last year. They're at 95.5. Zucker had a great year. Parisi, he's got to get a little long in the tooth. 95.5. The thing is, the West got better. I mean, we sit here, I can tell you virtually every team, with the exception of Vancouver, in the Pacific got better. If Dallas bounces back, St. Louis made a boatload of trades. I'm not buying that, by the way, the St. Louis thing. Maybe in the regular season. But Winnipeg's a beast. Nashville's a beast. I think Minnesota's the one I really just look at and say, I just don't see him getting the 95.5 points.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people check out those two programs?
It's KSHP.com. There's an app, KSHP Las Vegas. The shows are archived. Sportsbookradio.com. It's noon to 2 Pacific time days here in Las Vegas. And we'll have great hockey guests and the top sportsbook directors here in Vegas on Sportsbook Radio. It's a lot of fun. And we'll be doing some videos, Adam. We'll get to work on those for you at Bang the Book. We do a couple of videos a week. And certainly we'll be focusing on this week in the NFL, probably college football. It's funny, all of a sudden now my interest level is getting peaked with this golf tournament this week. I was going to take a break from golf, but I think there might actually be some nice opportunities right out of the gate. Just when we were talking, I would take a look at a guy like Bo Hostler coming up this week in the Safeway Open. 30-1 is a pretty nice price on a kid that's ready, I think, to go to the next level this year. That's what you do in golf, man. You got to try to get ahead of the curve. Who are the guys that are going to jump into the top 10, or who's the next thing? And this Hostler kid, out of the gate, might be interesting this week.
Well, you can follow Brian's work on Twitter, at Brian Blessing. And, of course, go to YouTube.com, search Bang the Book, and then you'll find his videos over there. Brian, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, always a pleasure, buddy. Have a wonderful week.
Great stuff there, as usual, from Brian Blessing, again, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. One more guest here for this Tuesday edition of the program. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great. You know, I always have to call in early and get put on hold to listen to you and Brian. It's an incredible segment. And if I may just add one thing to what Brian talked about and you guys finished up with the Golden Knights here in Las Vegas, I've talked to many bookmakers, and they have to just manually adjust the Las Vegas line when they put the openers out there. So across the country, I think there's going to be a lot of value when the Golden Knights have that first down spurt. And yet there's so many Joe Public people here betting the Knights every day. You're going to find value, find your spots to play against them, and you're going to get an extra 10, 20, or 30 cents in those spots.
I have to ask, Rolf, I mean, you know, obviously being from the Cleveland area here, you know, we've never had a pro NHL team. We've had AHL and IHL hockey. So basically, for those that don't know, it's basically the AAA of the NHL. It's just one step below the NHL. It's a very big step, but it is just one step below the NHL. Did you ever think that you would be invested in hockey? I mean, did you think going out to Vegas that would be one of the side effects?
You know, to be honest, full disclosure, I was a very late bandwagon jumper on her. You know, Brian Leonard had season tickets and had been going to games and watching every game with his wife. I did not get that excited. I was so tuned into college basketball. Until college hoops ended, I jumped on board. So I'm still one of the slow ones to get on board. I'm happy we have a sports team here. I'm very happy we're getting the Raiders, but it really did just ignite a city. This is the first time people in Las Vegas finally have something of their own. You know, with no sports teams, we know what Cleveland feels like with the Browns ownership. You're a fan, you're a part owner of that team. Well, Vegas finally has that same feeling.
Now, I know that Brian last year added some NHL to his portfolio. I'm sure a lot of other handicappers out there have done the same. Is that going to be a Rolf Michaels specialty here at any time soon, doing some NHL stuff?
It is not. I am still going to focus on college basketball. You know, college basketball is my baby. Last year coming off one of the best years I've ever had. You know, 351 teams and playing nightly keeps me busy enough. I don't want to do something half-assed just to do it. I'd rather just focus on what I've done historically well and hopefully continue to have that success.
Well, and Rolf, with people like you and Kyle Hunter, you know, you guys get me excited for college basketball. 353 Division I teams this year. You know, usually I just – in previous years, I really haven't had a ton of time to dig into it just with everything else that's going on. But, you know, you guys coming off of solid college basketball seasons, especially you, and especially what we talked about where, you know, you can watch some of those late games now that previously you weren't really able to, that gave you a good leg up in some of those conferences in the Western U.S. Certainly expecting you to have another strong season here this year, and kind of gets me excited about college basketball and being able to talk about it here on the program.
Yeah, you know, and really college basketball has gotten a big bump out here. UNLV has signed a couple prospects, and, you know, you look at the Nevada Wolfpack right now, you know, people picking them to win the entire tournament isn't that bad of a surprise. They actually are the number six favorite in all of college basketball. Their odds to win the tournament all the way down to 12-1. I mean, clearly they are a prime team and could very well be the number one seed in the West outbidding Gonzaga, but we'll wait to see if that comes to fruition.
Now, just because we're talking about it here, I do want to ask you a little bit, you know, since it's kind of coming up here, the season starts November 6th. So still a little over a month away from that. In terms of your preparations, Rolf, with the NFL and college football going on, you know, and all the other different things that you're looking at, you're still running queries for MLB and stuff like that. How much of your college basketball prep would you say you have done so far?
Not much. I'm just now getting into it about a month out, putting about 15 or 20 hours a week in this week. I'll up that next week. And what makes it easier is that, you know, the NFL, we're now a quarter past, you know what the teams are. You don't have to study them as hard. You follow the injuries, you look at the situations, and you see what's happening. The same in college football. Now that we're at a conference play, there's fewer surprises. There's less you have to do a deep dive into to find out about these teams. So as the football season progresses to the midway point, that frees up my week quite a bit to work, spend more time in college hoops.
All right, so let's talk about the markets that are still going on here, the NFL and college football. A couple of games I want to touch on with you here in the NFL, and I guess that we'll start with this point. You know, you mentioned that now we're, you know, pretty much 25% done for just about everybody, 30 of the 32 teams. Washington and Carolina had byes last week. Still get to the quarter pole here this week with their two games. Like you said, we pretty much know what these teams are. We have a pretty good idea of where these lines are going to open up each and every week. So what's the thought process like for you now in the NFL? I mean, do you lower your volume a little bit because you expect the market to be a little bit more efficient? Are you looking at some different factors? Does your operating strategy change a little bit now at this point of the year?
Well, I better change something from last week. I had my worst Sunday that I've had in a couple of years going 0-3, but it was, I actually used three totals last week. It was just a bizarre week for me. And, you know, people think, oh, you're a professional handicapper and you study and you're going to give out plays on all these sides. I did not give out one side last week. I didn't like the matchups. I didn't like the situations. So that just occurred. But, you know, you get a lot more into where you look at numbers and you look at situations. People now tend to look more at team names. I tend to put, we'll call it the Band-Aid effect, put a Band-Aid over the names, look how the teams have done the last 3 or 4 weeks, compare those stats in that span, look at the situations they're in, being at off-division rivals, revenge games, second straight road games, make my line and go from there without even looking at what the teams are. I become a very stats and numbers oriented person in the NFL.
That's an interesting point because, as everybody knows, I'm a baseball guy. And when it comes to baseball, just because of the inherent volatility of baseball statistics, I'm a big believer in sample size. I need something significant. I talk, over the spring and then into the summer about points of significance when some of these baseball stats actually become relevant from a sample size standpoint. And it takes a while. It takes a long time. Now, of course, that's a league with 162 games in its season. The NBA and the NHL have 82, NFL with 16, college pretty much 13 for the most part, 12 or 13 out there, 12 for the teams that don't make it to a bowl game or a conference championship game. But that's something that I've kind of had a lot of problems with, Rolf, is that for baseball, I need that sample size. But when you look at NFL, college football, NBA, NHL, and even golf, to a degree, which we've been talking a little bit more golf here on the shows lately, it's almost the smaller sample sizes that carry a lot more weight. And it's really tough for me to wrap my mind around that.
Well, it is. And you look at college football and, well, what sample size do you have for the first 4 weeks? Because you probably played three, maybe four non-conference teams. So, you're in an entirely different development. Same thing in the NFL. While your sample size the first couple weeks is different than moving on, the first couple weeks are when you have a lot of new players, you have new quarterbacks to new teams, you had 18 new offensive coordinators this week. Those first few weeks are the testing period. So to me, no matter what time it is in the NFL, I always use a 3 or a 4 week sample size, and I just have blinders on, and to me, that is the season. I don't care what they did 6 weeks ago. We have so many injuries. We have so many offensive line changes. We have so many players getting hurt and getting put on the IR. We have players coming back from suspensions. I have that 3 or 4 week window, and that really is my full season.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of games here for week five in the NFL, and we'll start with a team that you and I know quite well, the Cleveland Browns. They host the Baltimore Ravens here. They're mostly 3-point dog out there in the market. There's a 3.5 at my bookie, which is kind of strange. There's a 2.5 at Five Dimes with one of their usual teaser protection types of lines. So you've got this one here with Cleveland coming off of a game they shouldn't have lost out in Oakland. I mean, a couple of very questionable officiating calls, questionable coaching calls as well, but we're used to that at this point with Hugh Jackson. They take on a Baltimore team here coming off of a win over its chief rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers. As crazy as it is to say, Rolf, I don't think this is a bad spot for Cleveland.
Well, the way I handicap, I actually do like the Ravens. They've done fine after playing Pittsburgh. It's not like they have a huge letdown. Yes, this is the second straight road game. But looking at year-to-date, Baltimore is number 2 in yards per game diff. They're number 10 on offense. They're number 2 on defense. You look at their defense, they allowed 153 to Buffalo, 293 to Denver, 284 to a very good Pittsburgh team, and their only loss this year, Cincinnati, was because they were -3 turnovers, and they just gave up a lot of short field touchdowns and lost that game. While I like Baker Mayfield, again, this is what have you done for me lately? It looks just like last year. The Browns were historically bad, -28 turnovers. Well, what happens the first 3 weeks when they went 1-1-1 and could have been 3-0? They were +9 turnovers. Now we got Tyrod Taylor because we didn't want to make mistakes. Now, I'm not saying Baker Mayfield is the wrong decision, but Baker Mayfield turns the ball over four times. We're -2 in turnovers, and we lose the game. To me, Baltimore is a better defensive team. Joe Flacco does not feel the pressure. And Baker Mayfield, no matter how you feel as a rookie and no matter how strong he is, has to feel like he lost that game. Now he's 0-1 as a starter, and now he's playing a very difficult division rival.
It's always interesting when you talk about how teams do after playing their rivals. For example, one of the angles I love to play is I love to fade the St. Louis Cardinals in games after they just finished up a series with the Chicago Cubs. They're, 4-16 or something like that in their last 20 following a series against the Cubs, who are their chief rival. for Baltimore to hear that they've played pretty well after playing Pittsburgh, of interest to me in this spot here. I think what you said makes a lot of sense. I think for Cleveland too, you know, I mean, now you are coming back home off that long cross-country travel. Now you've got to prepare for a division rival. And the Browns do offer up something a little bit different with Baker Mayfield in these games against the Ravens than they previously had with the, you know, long collection of stiffs that goes on the back of that novelty jersey that, you know, some people around here in town like to wear around. So I think it's very interesting. But again, the function for me of talking about some of these NFL games is to look ahead a little bit. Baltimore plays a third straight road game next week against the Tennessee Titans. You play back-to-back division opponents at home. Then you go on the road and play a Titans team who maybe a little bit of a false 3-1, as we talked about in that previous segment, with all three of their wins by a field goal. But that's what I'm looking for. I kind of hope, I know this goes against Browns fandom, I kind of hope Baltimore looks really good here this week, then goes into that game next week overvalued for a third straight road game.
Agreed. And, you know, another thing to look at for this week for Cleveland, their defense was on the field for 90 plays. Those are college numbers. That's not an NFL-type situation. And, look, we lost another cornerback. We were already weak in the secondary, and that's why David Carr kept throwing those balls to the tight end over the middle on little jump passes, because we didn't have the cornerbacks to cover them. We're down another cornerback. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Baltimore gets back their best cornerback, Jimmy Smith, from suspension. But I agree with you. Baltimore was at Cincy week two, then they hosted Denver. So when they go to Tennessee next week, it's going to be their third straight road and fourth road in 5 weeks. And then it doesn't get easier because they host New Orleans and then go to Carolina, which will be an incredible stretch of another four road games in 5 weeks with the Saints in between and Pittsburgh on deck. So finding your spots in the NFL, make sure you circle them and reevaluate them when you get to that week.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, especially, and it makes it easy in the NFL because we got two teams on a bye here this week, so there's only 15 games, but you can do that. Even if there are games that you're not playing, you can still follow them to look ahead for future spots. A little bit tougher to do in college with, you know, 50, 60 games on the board in a weekend. But in the NFL, you definitely have that luxury with the lower number of games and the fact that it's once a week. So even if you don't have a play this week on Baltimore and Cleveland, maybe you look for an opportunity to fade Baltimore next week. Or if Baltimore finds a way to lose this game to Cleveland, maybe they're in a bounce back spot. Maybe that three straight road games is built into the line a little bit. Maybe the Ravens have some value. So again, when it comes to the tight NFL market, I think it's a really important point to make here at this stage of the game, Rolf, is that the talent gaps are so small in the NFL. You know, we talk about power ratings and their value in college football. In the NFL, these teams really aren't that different in most cases. The top to bottom, maybe 14 points at the most. Like we saw a Minnesota-Buffalo game, Minnesota at home getting the three, line 16.5, about a 2-touchdown difference from a power rating standpoint between the two. You're not going to get those big gaps in the NFL. So those situational elements, so critically important in that league.
The other thing to remember is, you know, the Superbook here puts out 2 week in advance lines. You have to know what those lines are because you have to see what the adjustments they made. Don't be afraid to say, why is this number this? Because 2 weeks ago, it was 2 points higher. And what happened? Well, they looked bad. They turned the ball over three times. They lost by 25. Joe Public is going to be on the team that won that game by 25. So Vegas makes the adjustment and changes the line. But just 2 weeks ago, before this game was played, that line would have been -6. And now you're only laying 3.5 or 4. So, you know, don't be swayed. If you see a line and you think it's off a few points, you probably aren't wrong. These lines are made to get equal money on both sides. These lines aren't made to where the team should be strength-wise.
All right, let's talk about game 461, 462. I guess it just so happens we're going to talk a lot of AFC North here in today's segment. Atlanta takes on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh field goal favorite in this one. We've come to find out this week that Le'Veon Bell probably joining Pittsburgh in a couple of weeks, won't be there for this week's game, wants to get his money, make sure he can't get franchise tagged, which would require leaving Pittsburgh before the end of the regular season. We'll see if he winds up doing that. But, you know, Rolf, I think if we took the guests here on the show, maybe a couple of Bang the Book writers as well, there's a non-zero chance we could score a touchdown in the Falcons defense right now.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I completely agree. I mean, you're an NFL team that went to the Super Bowl a few years ago, and on defense, you're allowing 27 first downs per game. You're allowing 5.0 yards per carry, and you're allowing over 70% completions, and that's after having a very good defensive game week one at Philadelphia when, you know, you saw a backup quarterback only gain 232 yards. Giving up 439 against Carolina is horrific. New Orleans had 534, and Cincinnati with, you know, 407. More importantly, though, for Cincinnati, the Bengals had 30 first downs. So Atlanta's given up 62 first downs the last 2 weeks.
Well, and then the thing about it, though, Atlanta's offense in that game against Cincinnati, and maybe this is an indictment of the Cincinnati defense, which is nowhere near what a lot of us expected coming into the season. Atlanta had 7.5 yards per play of their own in this game. So any shred of defense whatsoever, they win this game against the Bengals. They improved to 2-2. Instead, now they're 1-3 as they head on the road to take on a Pittsburgh team that certainly has problems of its own.
You know, and that's why we have a total of, what, 57.5? Crazy. You know, you look at the Steelers, to me, they tie Cleveland, lose to Kansas City at home. So now they are off a home loss. They go to Tampa, they survive. They come back, they've lost back-to-back home games. I'm not sure when the last time, I did not look that up, when the last time the Steelers have lost back-to-back home games. They are 10-1 ATS at home off a previous home loss, but that one was the Baltimore game. To me, even though Pittsburgh's allowed 450 yards plus each of the last 3 weeks and 24 first downs, you got to remember how much difference this team is since losing Ryan Shazier at the end of last year. They're now under 500 since Shazier's gone, going 3-4-1. And you could just see it in the defense. They're not the same defense. The offense is not the same. Yes, they had a couple good games against Cleveland and Kansas City, but that was week one, and we know what Kansas City's defense allows points to everyone as well. They moved it in Tampa Bay. Baltimore, they only had 284 yards. Again, Baltimore, though, is the number two defense. I think this is just another incredibly high-scoring game. And, you know, are you crazy to bet a game over 57? Well, times have changed. It's not the same NFL that you look at 4 or 5 years ago and say, well, that's just crazy. The way the defenses have been so poor, the way the offenses have progressed, you look at the numbers, Pittsburgh and Atlanta, both top seven offenses in the league, both bottom 28 defenses, Atlanta 28, Pittsburgh 30. So to me, I would lean with the home team just because I don't think the Steelers would lose back-to-back home games in consecutive weeks. And even though the line is crazy, I would still side with the total going over that crazy number.
And it is remarkable to look at, you know, what's going on with the Steelers here so far this season. I'm trying to run that query that we mentioned here with the back-to-back straight-up losses. And I've gone back several years already in that Killer Sports database, and I can't find it. So it's been a long time since this has been a problem for Pittsburgh. And, you know, it's one of those things where every offseason, Ben Roethlisberger seems like he threatens to retire. I know a lot of people think that he's a pretty significant drama queen, and that does seem like it's probably the case. All of a sudden, you know, you talk about that week one game against the Browns, and you talk about what they did, you know, playing pretty well there in week two offensively against the Chiefs, and everyone's kind of saying, well, Le'Veon Bell who? Well, now you look at this game last week, James Conner has 12 touches for 44 yards. Roethlisberger only completes 27 of 47, a touchdown and a pick. Now all of a sudden, man, this team needs Le'Veon Bell. And it's always fascinating to me to look at how those narratives morph and change, especially in the NFL, from a week-to-week standpoint. And you kind of wonder here now. I mean, you used to have to put a safety spying Le'Veon Bell just because Ben used him so much. Linebackers would have to pay attention to Le'Veon Bell coming out in the flat. Now teams can game plan a lot differently for Pittsburgh. They can blanket Antonio Brown. They can bracket Antonio Brown. They can dedicate a safety all game to Antonio Brown, dedicate the, you know, the linebacker on Brown's side to him. And Pittsburgh's having some issues offensively as a result. Their efficiency is not nearly what we would expect from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So you kind of wonder here, if this game becomes an arms race, and it certainly looks like it probably will with that total up in the 57 and a half range, can Pittsburgh exploit that Atlanta defense enough to keep up with what Atlanta's offense is going to do? And I'm not sure. And it's very, very hard to fade Pittsburgh here as a field goal favorite at home against Atlanta, a team that has no defense to speak of. That may end up being the play this week.
Well, you know, it's a situation where you look at Pittsburgh at home, and if I said to you, we know Kansas City's defense is last in all of football right now. Well, what did Pittsburgh do running the ball against Kansas City? 13 carries, 33 yards, 2.5 yards per carry. Baltimore's the opposite end. We know Baltimore has a very good defense, but still, Pittsburgh at home, 11 carries, 19 yards, 1.7 yards per carry. Just incredible numbers. And, you know, at some point when you're leaving on Bell, you're going to say, well, you know, how much of it is my point? You know, you can come back now and you made the same point. And how much is it that you'll come back and your team is just going to be so pissed at you if you lose a few more games and you're actually 3-4-1 and have a losing record and may not make the playoffs and Le'Veon Bell's coming in just to cash his payday? That'll be an interesting dynamic. While we were talking, Adam, I did look up, you know, we talked about this incredibly high total. Since 2010 in the NFL, totals of 55 and a half or higher have gone 15-8-1. So still a very solid 60%+ record to the over, even with those incredibly high totals.
And we'll see as the totals probably continue to increase here as we go throughout the NFL season. All right, let's transition over to the college football side of things here. And you know, it's almost exclusively conference play. So how does that change your handicap, Rolf?
Well, you know, a lot of the things you look at, you know, your yards per game, your points per game, when you're comparing them, you just can't do that. That's going to give me a great segue into a new thing I shared with, you know, with my followers this week. For the first time ever, I put out my stat comparison sheets in a matchup order. And they're unique because they're my offense, defense, and special team numbers. They're not the NCAA numbers. It's something we did at North Coast, and there a few people do them. But you know, and for Phil Steele Publications. But they're the offensive numbers based on the opponent you played. It gives you a rank. The defensive numbers on the opponent you played, it gives you a rank. And the special team numbers. And we don't give enough credence to special teams, but you know, we've seen them change quite a few games. And then it also has the strength of schedule, the yards per game, the points per game diff, the yards per play, sacks, and turnovers. So to me, you know, I start looking at my sheet at what the quality of competition is with the strength of schedule, looking where my offensive and defensive numbers are. And if you don't want to use that, the most important thing would be start looking at conference-only stats. You know, we have the Sun Belt. We have some teams that play three Power 5 teams, and we have some that play one. When you get to this point in time, you know, off the top of my head, CFB Stats is a great site where you can click on the teams and then click on conference only, and you get the comparison of conference-only stats if you want to look at how those teams have done and comparing them. But moving forward, it's a complete necessity to make that your main focus.
Now, what about some of the more, I guess I'll call them intangible or maybe unquantifiable types of things here, where when you get to conference play, you've got a lot more familiarity. You know the personnel on both teams. Of course, a lot of times coaches within the same conference were recruiting these types of guys, especially if they're close together geographically. How much do you really factor that in, maybe from a side or a total standpoint, with knowing your opponent, knowing the stadium because you were there 2 years ago? How much does that factor into the equation for you?
It does. The important thing is to remember, though, you know, we've seen so many coaches turn over. We see so many coordinators over get the turnover that you have to look to make sure you have the same OC, same DC. How many seniors are on your team? I mean, if you have a team like Connecticut that, you know, that is starting 18 freshmen on their two deep in defense, you know, how much does it mean? They've never been there. And other teams are senior-laden teams that had a lot of sophomore start that made that trip. The other thing that is more important as well is I put a lot of credence into those revenge games where it costs a team late in the year a chance to perhaps to win their conference or win their division. Those type of situations where they're now playing early in the year, you don't think about those revenge spots a lot, but I make sure to circle them.
No, that's a really excellent point. I like that you talk about that. And, you know, that's one of the things we touched on a little bit in the previous segment with Brian Blessing with regards to the NHL, looking for those early season games where you're playing a team that knocked you out of the playoffs or maybe that, you know, severely hurt your playoff chances as the regular season was coming to an end, can be a factor here in college football as well. So let's go ahead and start with a game that may kind of embody a lot of these different things that we're talking about here. Game 309-310 on Friday night, Georgia Tech takes on Louisville. Georgia Tech, a 3.5-point favorite. Now, Georgia Tech in the non-conference portion of the season really hasn't played particularly well, but we know that they're a tough team to game plan for because they run that triple option offense. Well, Louisville sees that triple option offense with regularity, although this is a cross-division matchup here. Louisville in the Atlantic, Georgia Tech in the Coastal, so they don't see it as much as some of the other ACC teams do. Is that a factor for you here in this one with the Yellow Jackets laying 3.5 on the road?
Well, you know, when we were talking about this game and I was writing down some notes, it caught me by surprise, and I actually had to look it up because I didn't believe what I was looking at. These teams have never faced each other. Louisville came into the ACC in 2013, and this is their first ever meeting. So we have complete unfamiliarity with Louisville. You have a new DC in Van Gorder who came over from Notre Dame. And the one thing you don't want to do, if you're a college football program, you don't want to face the option mid-season on a short week off your rival. Oh, yeah, that's what Louisville's doing. They're off a Florida State game where they had a 51-yard edge, 8 first down edge, turned the ball over late, Juwan pass. I don't know why you made that pass. They get the turnover. Florida State comes down, scores, wins that game. So now you're on a Friday night. You're on a short week. And Georgia Tech didn't have their option going, but they got that feel-good win against Bowling Green. And to me, it doesn't matter who you're playing when you have an option. A lot of teams, you say, well, they beat this team bad. It doesn't matter. It was a nobody. But when you have the option, you have to get your timing down. So I don't care if you're the sister of the poor, even though Bowling Green's one of the worst teams in the FBS. You know, they ran that ball 49 times for 372 yards, 7.6 yards per carry. It gave the quarterback Daquan Marshall time for the pitches to his running back. It gave him the ability to get the read option going down. And to me, it's a situation where, you know, I do like Georgia Tech in this one, even though, you know, you go back and look, they're 2-3 on the year. But 2-3, they went to USF, a very good team. They had 176-yard edge. They were minus 2 turnovers. They went to Pittsburgh. They lost that game 24-19. Well, they had a 51-yard edge. They were minus 1 turnover. And the Clemson loss was just legit. Clemson had played Georgia Southern, played the option the week before, and then was able to play Georgia Tech the next week and just shut them down. I think Georgia Tech is a sneaky good team off two misleading losses on the road where they had a significant yardage edge but lost a turnover battle. And, you know, Louisville's not that team. Louisville's minus 7 turnovers. They've lost a turnover battle in 4 of the 5 games they've played, and they were even in the Western Kentucky game. They're minus 7 on the year. I like Georgia Tech in this game.
And I remember that Georgia Tech-South Florida game very vividly because that was one of our picks for the first week of the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. Had Georgia Tech in that one. South Florida ran back 2 kicks for touchdowns in the first quarter of that game. So
same player, right? Same player ran it back.
Same player, yeah. So Georgia Tech was definitely on the wrong side of some history there in that one. And also, too, I think it's very important to keep in mind here that, you know, for a lot of these teams at this point of the season, this is an angle for Louisville here this week, also potentially an angle for Georgia Tech, given that, you know, they finished the season with Georgia on the road. But you got to start thinking about bowl eligibility a little bit here. Maybe the kids aren't. Maybe the coaches are trying to keep them from doing that. But when you look at this spot for Louisville, there are not many wins left on the schedule. At Boston College after this game, they host Wake Forest following a bye. They're at Clemson, at Syracuse, then play back-to-back ranked opponents, at least as of now, in NC State and Kentucky, who Kentucky we'll talk about here a little bit more in a segment, much, much better than anybody really anticipated. So for Louisville, their margin for error is getting very, very small. For Georgia Tech, maybe a little bit more there. So you'd like to think Louisville really shows up in this spot, but for all the reasons mentioned, it is a very tricky spot for the Cardinals.
You know, Louisville, you know, as you talk about that schedule looking forward, you know, besides the Wake Forest game, I'd probably make them a few points favored because they're off a bye. They're going to be a dog in each of those games. Right now, Syracuse, the way Syracuse is playing, you know, that's a road game, and that's another spot. Let's look ahead. You want to talk about Louisville. Louisville would be going to Clemson on November the 3rd. The next week, they go to Syracuse, play Dino Babers offense. They're going to be on the field for 90-plus plays in a high-tempo offense the week after getting physically manhandled against Clemson, and it's on a short week. And then they finish up, like you said, with NC State or Kentucky, and they very well may be a home dog in both of those games.
Yeah, so Louisville looks like they could certainly be a long-term fade here throughout the rest of the season. All right, let's go to the SEC here, the CBS game on Saturday afternoon, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific, LSU and Florida. LSU, a 2.5-point favorite going down to the Swamp. And I got to say, Rolf, as I'm going up and down the card here, looking at all these different types of games, this is one that I just feel like I can't get a feel for. So I'm glad to talk about it here with you.
You know, I agree with you. And if I could just backtrack 1 second, Adam, and I think it's an important point for our listeners. You talked about Louisville and a long-term fade. Well, Bobby Petrino's been there since 2014. He's had 9 wins, 8 wins, 9 wins, 8 wins his first 5 years. When you have a team that's been to the bowl and has 8 or more wins for that many years, when they get their 7th loss, which knocks them out of bowl eligibility, to me it is an automatic fade game number 8, the next week after they're knocked out. I think that's just a vital part for everyone to put in their handicapping repertoire. And sorry, I jump back to LSU and Florida. You know, in that game, I completely agree with you. These two teams are both my play against teams, although LSU looked very good against Ole Miss, and you know, LSU has looked very good against Ole Miss each of the last 3 years. Remember, Ed Orgeron was fired from Ole Miss, and he's taken the Rebels to the woodshed each of the last 3 years he's played them. But these teams are they're both in the top 10 in turnover margin. You have Florida with +9 turnovers, and you have LSU with +7 turnovers. On the year, you look at LSU, they're a ranked team, they're 5-0. But they're only +63 yards per game. Florida the same way. They're 4-1, but they're only 67 yards per game. They have offenses that have struggled, and yes, LSU did get it going with 573 yards against Mississippi, but this is a situation where in my rankings, I have LSU as the number 12 defense and Florida as the number 6 defense. Second straight year they're at Florida because of the hurricane a couple years ago where they moved the Florida game to LSU. So you don't have the back and forth. Florida had a come-from-behind win last year. It's a game that I really think it's going to be a lower-scoring game again. You know, you look at LSU, and yes, you look at them averaging 34 points per game, but the 397 yards per game and Joey Burrow only completing 53%, now finally going on the road. He did go on the road against Auburn. They put up to 22 points. But going on the road again against a rival, against a Florida defense that held Tennessee to 21 and Mississippi State to 6, my lean would be with Florida. And excuse me. And yes, it's a low total, but I would still lean with the under.
Yeah, when you look at Florida this year, I like that you brought up turnover margin. This was a stat I meant to mention last week on the show, forgot to do it, but it's a good time to mention it here. Florida leads all defenses in the country with 10 fumble recoveries. They've recovered 77% of their opponent's fumbles, 10 of 13. They're +8 in fumbles this year. They've gotten 10 of them. They've only lost 2 of them. A lot of times fumbles tend to regress because, you know, this isn't interceptions where maybe you're disguising defenses or you've just got a ball hawking secondary, something like that. A lot of times fumbles do tend to regress. So for Florida this year, they've gotten very, very fortunate in the fumble luck department. So maybe over the long term here, that is a stat that does wind up regressing a little bit for them. On the LSU side of the coin, look, I don't know. Maybe Auburn's just not that good. And Auburn is a team that I downgraded in my power ratings this week by about a field goal. Maybe they're just not a very good team. I think Louisiana Tech is a very solid team, so that's a decent win for LSU. But the yards were relatively close in that game. LSU at Florida, host Georgia, host Mississippi State, bye week, then get their then play their game against Alabama. And you know, we all know what Alabama is doing to pretty much everybody so far this year. So I think we find out a lot more about LSU over the next four games, beginning with this one here. And, you know, again, just because you don't play a game, and look, this is the CBS game, so you want to play it. If there's no edge, don't do it, but use it for your future handicapping, because there are going to be some opportunities to probably fade both of these teams as we go forward.
You know, the other thing is where I have a significant mismatch is Florida's D-line against LSU's O-line. Joey Burrow really hasn't been pressured. The Auburn game, he got sacked once. He got sacked twice in the Miami of Florida game, but Florida right now is 15 sacks, and that means they're sacking their opponent's quarterback 12.1% of the time he goes back to pass the ball. So, you know, it's a situation where if LSU needs to have a clean pocket. If LSU wins the game, I'm going to say they have two sacks or less allowed. If Florida's D-line takes control, gets pressure, Joey Burrow hasn't thrown an interception yet. He only has six touchdown passes. But if they have over two sacks, then I think Florida wins the game. So that's going to be my telling stat. We'll see what happens.
All right, let's go out to the Pac-12 here. Game 355, 356. I got to say, Rolf, this one's a little bit of a head-scratcher for me, at least from a power rating standpoint. I have a tough time. I know Colorado's at home. I know Boulder's a pretty good home field advantage there in the altitude. But I have a tough time making Colorado a favorite here because their body of work so far, with wins over Colorado State, Nebraska, New Hampshire, and UCLA, really doesn't impress me a whole lot. And they were not a popular, sharp team coming into the season.
Well, if you want to look at the Cal Sports Guide, it's going to tell you that Arizona State has played the number 34 schedule and Colorado's played the number 121 schedule. Now, there's only 130 FBS teams, but my strength of schedule actually goes to like 140-something because there are 13 FCS teams that have played stronger schedules than the bottom strength of schedule teams in mine. You know, on the offense and defensive side, I have the offenses basically even in my rankings. Arizona State, number 39, Colorado, 32. Defense, I have Colorado a little better, number 46 against number 64. That's taking into account the strength of schedule. But to me, it's just a situation here that, you know, Arizona State, the world's talking about Eno Benjamin and the performance he had. Arizona State rushed for almost 400 yards, 8.3 yards per carry. But again, that's a very fake win against a very poor Oregon State team. You look at the Sun Devils, they went to San Diego State, lost a game by a touchdown. They went to Washington, lost a game by a touchdown, come home for 1 week against Oregon State, and now they're going on the road again. Meanwhile, Colorado has been home for a New Hampshire win, a UCLA win, and now they're home for a third straight week. I am semi-buying into the Colorado Buffaloes. You know, I think their defense is playing soundly along 4.1 yards per carry. Granted, they got Nebraska in a good spot. Granted, they got Colorado State in a neutral setting, and then UCLA still learning their offense. But again, you can only play who's on the schedule. This is the test for Colorado moving forward. Right now, I am looking to buy Colorado. I think they'll have a good performance, and because of the situation, I favor the Buffaloes.
So let me ask you this then. I mean, their only road game on the road in Nebraska against the Nebraska team that had its week one game canceled against Akron, so Nebraska couldn't work out the kinks of that new Scott Frost scheme. And by the way, I mean, they're not that good of a team anyway. They still don't have a win yet on the season. So when you look at this situation here for Colorado, they go on the road to USC next week. Is that a game that you have circled as a fade situation?
I haven't yet. It depends on what happens this week with them. If they prove to me they could beat a good team, we'll see what happens. You know, you know, as I said, as each team, as you're trying to get, if you don't have a thought of what you know of the team, I can't say it's an automatic fade situation. So I see them play in this setting against a team that's averaging 5.1 yards per carry, and we'll have to see how their defense performs. You know, the one thing about Colorado, which they haven't done in the past, is they have a dynamic pass game with Laviska Shenault, and he's averaging 15.3 yards per carry. He has 38 receptions, and Steven Montez is finally throwing the ball downfield, and even though he's throwing deep passes, he's still completing 76%. So those numbers are crazy good. When you're hitting 76% and you're throwing the ball deep, if that offense can continue, perhaps against USC, they may not be a fade.
All right, let's go to the SEC here. Game 381-382, Kentucky on the road at Kyle Field against Texas A&M. This number opened 6.5. It's down to 5.5. Do you agree with the move here, Rolf?
You know, I do. Granted, I love when these basketball schools that have been so bad for so long in football get going. To me, I mean, just makes college football better. Duke comes to mind a few years ago, and now Kentucky's doing it. And it may never happen in Kansas, but we'll wait to see what happens there. But, you know, you have the ranked team of Kentucky finally getting in the top 13, I think they are now. But everything's been done on the road. You know, the Florida game they had was that first win. That was week two. The wins against Murray State, Mississippi State, and South Carolina certainly are impressive. But they only had 300 yards against Mississippi State, and they only had 327 yards against South Carolina, both at home. Terry Wilson, their quarterback, has a 2-5 ratio. You don't expect a team that is ranked number 13 and is 5-0 has a quarterback that has a 2-5 ratio. Again, the whole offense goes behind Benny Snell, 5.6 yards per carry. I love him. But this is the same A&M team that took Clemson to the wire. At Alabama, yes, they got outgained by 131 yards. They were only minus 2 first downs. That's pretty good. They did what they had to at Jerry World against Arkansas this week. I think it's a Kentucky team that, even though they're allowing 12 points per game, the situation is I have A&M as a much better offense. Kentucky's defense I have a little higher, but going on the road in this situation against an A&M team, you know, if you watch that Clemson game, you know how loud Station gets at Kyle Field, and that's something that Terry Wilson just has not seen. The Florida game was semi-loud week two. A&M will be nothing like that. I like the home team.
I like Texas A&M in this spot too, and I was actually at Kroger Field over the weekend for that South Carolina versus Kentucky game. That game hinged on basically two or three mistakes from South Carolina. They had a punt down at the two-yard line, but the guys diving to try and save the ball wound up touching it while they were in the end zone. So that was a touchback. Gave Kentucky 18 yards. South Carolina also had another situation where they accepted a penalty on a punt. Had Kentucky re-kick it, wound up being a plus 9 yard scenario there for Kentucky. Pinned South Carolina inside the 5. And then finally, South Carolina had a fourth down stop of Benny Snell. Took a 15-yarder for unsportsmanlike conduct. Gave Kentucky a fresh set of downs. Wound up being a 24-3 game at that point. So South Carolina played some really stupid football in that game. This isn't sour grapes for me being a converted South Carolina fan because of my wife, but I was not all that impressed with Kentucky at all. They're very good in the trenches on the offensive and defensive sides. I will give them credit for that. But Terry Wilson, who you mentioned with the 2-5 ratio, he throws a bad football. Even on short throws, there's a ton of wobble to that thing. Can't really throw a ball more than 8 yards downfield. I think he had one completion, maybe more than 4 or 5 yards down the field in this game. South Carolina just never adjusted. Texas A&M has a better defensive line than South Carolina, has a better offensive line than South Carolina, has a better coach than South Carolina and Jimbo Fisher. And also, I think they make those adjustments to Kentucky. I think South Carolina just never really did. Their safeties were kind of floating, taking bad angles, missing tackles. I think A&M is a much more refined type of team than the Gamecocks are. I think this is the week where Kentucky kind of hits a wall. Maybe it doesn't happen. You know, I am kind of going off of what I saw in that one game sample size, but being there, sitting up above the game where you can see everything kind of set up, see everything kind of come together. I think it's a much better view than what we get with the sideline cameras on television. I think Kentucky's a little bit of a false type of team here, a little bit of a paper tiger. And I think that this Texas A&M game is a chance for them to show it. And I think when they host Georgia on November 3rd, they get pushed around quite a bit in that game too.
Well, and Kentucky, like you said, in that South Carolina game, they were plus three turnovers. Most teams are going to win being plus three turnovers. And, you know, why is a 3-2 team favored over an undefeated number 13 ranked team? Well, if you're 3-2 and your two losses are to Clemson and Alabama, and oh yeah, by the way, in those two games, you were only outgained by 20 yards per game and you covered both. That's a pretty good resume.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. That's one of the games I think that I'll have some interest in here as we go throughout the week. All right, one more game I want to touch on here, and then we'll get to your situational and technical plays of the week in lieu of the pick six, which we talked about on last week's show. Game 397-398, early kickoff in Dallas, the Red River rivalry. Oklahoma's a 7.5-point favorite over Texas.
Well, you know, Tom Herman had his season last year, and people thought maybe he was over his head in Texas after having come from Houston. But I'm going to throw out a stat which is just going to make me play the Texas Longhorns, and that is Tom Herman is 10-1 ATS as a dog. He gets his teams up. He comes from, you know, he spent those years with Urban Meyer at Ohio State. Goes to Houston, pulls the big win against Oklahoma there, beats Florida State, and just takes care of business. We saw the USC game, how well they played, when we saw the TCU game, how well they played. And yes, Oklahoma is doing it with offense, and Kyler Murray has a 17-2 ratio. But let's look at the defensive side of the ball. I mean, OU has played FAU at home, UCLA, Iowa State, Baylor, Army. Okay, none of those offenses scare anyone. I mean, Baylor used to, but under Matt Rule, they're not the same team. And with that slate of schedules, they're allowing 405 yards per game and 23.8 first downs. How about if I told you this? Those five games that they've played, they're 5-0. They are getting out first down on the year, 23.8 to 23.6. That shows me your defense has some issues. Sam Ellinger is finally translated into the quarterback Texas needs him to do, completing 65%. The running game is so-so. They haven't gotten it going yet, but I think their defense is legit. They're allowing 3.4 yards per carry. They're allowing 55% completions, and they've played one of the strongest schedules. Texas has played my number 14 schedule, Oklahoma my number 50. Texas with my top number 21 on defense. I think they're legit. I'll grab the points with them.
All right, let's take a look here at your situational and technical plays for this week. Then you can go ahead and get yourself a nice big drink of water there. Let's start with the situational play that you're looking at for week six.
Yeah, I apologize, guys. I've had this cough for a couple weeks. I have no idea what it is, and I try to cover it up. But again, my apologies to our listeners as I just struggling to get through this talking. But, you know, my situational play is going to be Auburn against Mississippi State. You know, you said before you're not sure how good Auburn is. Well, I'm really not sure how good Mississippi State is. You know, I think Mullen deserves a lot of credit what he did at Mississippi State, continuing to get them to the level they played. He leaves to go to Florida. You bring in Joe Moorhead, the old OC from Penn State. But you look at the offense the last 2 weeks in conference play. Yes, they put up 56 against Louisiana and 63 against SF Austin. But at Kentucky, they put up 7 points, 201 yards. Against Florida, 6 points, 202 yards. Only 26 first downs in those two games. I think Auburn has a better defense than both of them. I think Auburn had the situation where they beat Arkansas 34-3 two games ago. Yes, they had that letdown last week against Southern Miss, and they didn't play well. They only won by 11. They only had an 81 first down edge. But I can explain that game. That's because you're in an Arkansas-Mississippi State sandwich, and I don't have a problem with that performance in that role. Now you're going to Miss State. I think Auburn's defense can shut down Miss State again. I think Auburn's offense has been enough. And obviously we know Jarrett Stidham's not the quarterback that everyone made him out to be to start off the season as one of the Heisman favorites. He's completing 63% with a 5-2 ratio, but he's only 7.4 yards per attempt. He's just not throwing the ball deep. He's not making their offense exciting. But, you know, it's a situation where I think we have the better defense against a team that came in sky high, is now off back-to-back SEC losses, including a home loss where they only scored 13 points. I think that's too tough of a situation for Mississippi State to bounce back on.
Yeah, I mean, with the adjustments that I made to my power ratings, I've got Auburn a 2-point favorite here, so I do still have them a road favorite in Stark Vegas, but this is one of those situations where, from a matchup standpoint, with how good Auburn's defensive line is, you can take away Nick Fitzgerald's running ability. Nick Fitzgerald completing 49.1% of his passes, and that's the thing. We watched Trace McSorley run around for chunks of yards against the Buckeyes last week, but Trace McSorley can also throw a pretty good ball, and we saw that when Joe Moorhead was at Penn State. He doesn't really have that passing element here at Mississippi State, and I don't know if he's going to try to force it as the season goes along, or, you know, just kind of focus on recruiting somebody that can be more of a dual threat type of guy, because Fitzgerald's just not there as a passer. So in this particular matchup, I think it does favor Auburn, despite the adjustment that I made last week.
You know, the most shocking thing to me when you look at Mississippi State is, you know, they had 17 starters back this year. They had 9 on offense. In those 9 on offense, they had 4 of their 5 offensive linemen back. Well, last year, on the season, they allowed 13 sacks. This year, with 4 of their 5 starting linemen back and the 5th lineman had starting experience, they've given up 9 sacks the last 2 weeks to Kentucky and Florida. Obviously, in that new offensive system he put in, again, it's not clicking with the offensive line. It's not clicking with Nick Fitzgerald. And against an Auburn D-line that I have as one of my top 5 D-lines in the country, another mismatch gets exposed.
All right, so we got one more game to talk about here. That is your technical play of the week. So what are you looking at here for week 6?
Well, you know what? My technical play last week was the play against Hawaii, and San Jose State almost pulled the upset with, I think, 5 overtimes and a bunch of missed field goals on both sides of the ball. Well, I'm going right back and playing against Hawaii, and the technical play is on Wyoming. Hawaii now is 1-14 as a favorite. They're 0-11 as a home favorite against FBS teams. Their only cover was against an FCS program. Hawaii has my number 121 D, and they face the number 137 schedule. Again, there's only 130 teams. That means 7 FCS teams have played a tougher schedule than Hawaii. Wyoming has my number 6 D. Wyoming is 8-0 as an away dog of under 23 points if their opponent's off back-to-back wins. Hawaii, 2-17 ATS as a conference home at home against conference foes, 2-7 ATS. And Hawaii, like we said, third trip to the mainland off a 5 overtime game, played well into the morning Sunday, and now travels back to face a Wyoming defense that's going to slow them down.
Tons of great numbers there. I love everything you said. And also, too, and I talked about this in the opening line report that I wrote, number opened 4. And you have a Wyoming offense that has been atrocious this season. A couple of weeks ago, they should have lost to Wofford at home, had to score a late touchdown to avoid that embarrassment. They're making this long trip from Laramie, which is, you know, sky high, was 8,000-something feet above sea level, to Hawaii. Very, very different atmosphere, to say the least. And yet, this number opens 4, and the first move on this game is to come down to 3.5. That tells you everything you need to know about what the sharp side is in this game, because Hawaii, who is much, much better than any of us thought, all of us have upgraded them double digits in our power ratings since the start of the season, they're still only a 3.5-point favorite here at home against Wyoming. So, again, along with all the great numbers and stats and records that you gave out there, again, the context clues in the market would suggest to us that Wyoming is the side here. Again, nothing is a lock, nothing is a guarantee, but if you've done this for a long enough time, or you're an astute enough person that looks at the odds screen, you know, multiple times a week, this is a game that had to jump out at you.
Well, and you look at Wyoming, and, you know, it's what have you done for me lately? We all remember watching them week zero, and probably more people watched them against New Mexico State because it was the only game on, and there's only a handful of games that week, and they held New Mexico State to 135 yards. Well, what's happened that they are allowing 386 yards per game now? Well, there are three losses this year: Washington State, Missouri, Boise State. Where do those three teams' offense rank as far as my ratings go as offensive teams? Washington State, number 18. Missouri, number 15. Boise, number 10. I don't think there's another team in the country that has played three top 18 offenses. Well, yes, most teams are going to lose to those three. So you got the 2-3 team taking care of business, beating who they should, losing to teams I expect them to, and this is one of those teams they should beat.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. What do you guys got going on over there right now, Rolf?
Well, again, you know, if you go to WagerTalk.com and go to the Cal Sports page, you're going to get the Gridiron Guide, a full-page matchup per team. You'll get my stack comparison, college football. We'll be starting some new stuff with the new sports coming up as well around the corner.
Well, you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, appreciate your time. Thank you for soldiering your way through the segment here, and hopefully you can kick that coffee this week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure, Adam.
Great stuff there with Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brian Leonard, professional handicapper also from WagerTalk, and Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. We're chat NFL, college football, and also work in some Major League Baseball here because I've gotten a couple of questions about hedging futures now that the MLB playoffs are here. Thursday, Brad Powers and Tony George. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. And Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.